From WHQR Public Radio in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. With the region's latest heat wave and the tropical soup that spawned Hurricane Gert and three other potential systems in the North Atlantic, it's hard to think about getting outside and planting anything that isn't zoned for a humid subtropical climate. But fall will be here before you know it, and in southeastern North Carolina and northeastern South Carolina, fall is a great time to plant. We're going to find out why today from our experts. And we're going to hear about the latest garden trends, but most importantly, we're going to get your gardening questions answered. With us today for a good romp through the garden is Tom Erickson, co-owner of The Transplanted Garden, a garden center and nursery in downtown Wilmington. Tom Erickson, welcome back to Coastline.
Thank you. It's always great to be here.
Great to have you here. And we're also very glad to have with us today Barbara Sullivan, author of Garden Perennials for the Coastal South. She's also a prolific lecturer on gardening in southeastern North Carolina. Barbara Sullivan, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Rachel. It's great to be here.
And we are inviting you to join the conversation. Do you have a question about how to handle a particular part of your yard or garden? Are you having a problem with a plant and would like some advice from an expert? Remember, the longer you wait to call in on these gardening shows, the harder it is for us to get to your question. You can reach us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Why is fall such a good time to plant? Tom Erickson.
Well, as things cool down, it's a lot easier on the plants to get them established. The ground is still plenty warm, as we know right now. But the air cools off, the ground stays warm, so you get a lot of good root growth. So by getting the plants in this fall, you'll have a better established plant for next season's heat. That's really the key thing. If you can get them established now and then have them more tolerant of the heat, they'll have a bigger root system, they'll be able to manage more, and you'll have to water a lot less than you would if you plant them in March or April, and then all of a sudden May turns to 90 degrees. So it's a very good season, and it's hard to get people into that train of thought. They think you plant everything in the spring, but your bigger trees and shrubs, you really want to get in the fall to get them going and get them ready.
So that's especially for trees and shrubs that we're talking about. And what are some of those good, hardy, plantable trees and shrubs right now, Barbara Sullivan?
Well, actually, what I was going to just follow up for a second and say that for people who have moved here from somewhere else, which is a lot of people, I think what you need to do is flip your gardening calendar in your mind and realize that the reason that you planted in the spring when you lived up in Connecticut or in Ohio or whatever was because you wanted to get the plant established all through the spring and summer and fall so that it could make it through the freezing weather of winter so that it would be fully established. And so what Tom's saying is this is just the reverse of that, that the harshest season for us is the summer. And so that's when it's going to really stress the plants the most. So that's why the fall just does what Tom said, gives them a great head start. I think there's lots of good answers for trees and shrubs. There's so many good ones, but I was also going to put in a plug for planting perennials right now because it's a great time to do that too. So I don't know if you want to start with some trees.
Yeah, what are some of those trees, shrubs, and then we'll get to perennials
flowering cherries, red buds, a lot of your earlier spring blooming trees. One of my favorites is the flowering apricot, and they bloom in January and are very, very fragrant. They look a lot like a cherry, and they have some rosy pink or, you know, reddish color, white flowers, and they're very, very nice. They'll bloom anywhere from mid to late January. Sometimes it's only for a couple weeks if we get real warm. A couple years ago, I had one that bloomed in my yard that bloomed for probably 6 weeks. And what's fun is the Baltimore Orioles will come in and they'll drink the nectar out of the flowers on those trees as well. And I think they actually eat some of the flowers. But things like any of your deciduous trees, crepe myrtles are fine to establish in the heat. They love it. I mean, they're native to Southeast Asia and Southern India. And so they can tolerate the heat. In fact, if you want to transplant a crepe myrtle, it's actually a good time to do it now. They don't transplant in the heat of the summer or in the cold. Their roots are too inactive, but during the heat of the summer, that's when they're the most active and they can be easily transplanted. You're going to have to cut them back some, but you can do it now. But
And do it without the crepe murder.
Wouldn't do it without the crepe
murder.
That's
a whole separate thing.
That's just a sin.
That's a separate felony. Yeah.
And can you explain for folks who haven't heard our super duo before talk about crepe murder? What is that? What does it look like? And why do we not practice it here?
Well,
so what people try to do, I think because they want to get lusher blooms on their crepe myrtles, is they cut them back so that they look like they've been maimed. They look like people who have been victims of some terrible accident or tragedy. And it is just not healthy for the plant. The plant wants to have a natural sort of a vase shape or a spreading shape, and it's...
And there was a myth for a while among landscapers, I think, that the way to make crepe myrtles bloom a lot was to cut them all the way back. But
because
we learned that's a myth.
Because they do bloom on new wood, but...
Yeah, I mean, they'll bloom on the new wood, but a simple application of putting superphosphate on them in late January, early February gets them to bloom wonderfully. When you cut them back real hard, you get fewer but huge blooms, and they, you know, tend to bow down, and you're mowing the lawn or whatever, they're going to whap you in the face because, I mean, they're so heavy they bend over. But it really disfigures the tree. Yeah. It makes them just look awful.
Yeah.
The crepe myrtles that are out along College, out where a lot of the car dealers are, in that section there, they stopped pruning those 10 or so years ago, I think it was, and they are now big, beautiful trees. And, you know, when you keep cutting them back, you get these big gnarly knuckles that are just awful. And the landscapers will go through and cut them in October, early November, and they start to grow back and then get hit with cold. So it's a practice that does not need to be done. I mean, if you want a smaller crepe myrtle, buy one that's going to stay naturally smaller.
And I was just going to follow up on the about the trees and shrubs. And tell me if you think this is right or not. But I would say just about any tree or shrub, the fall is a good time to put it in. There be maybe some exceptions if they're iffy in this area, meaning that they usually grow more in a hotter climate like zone 9 or something. But if you're doing anything zone 8 and above, you're fine. And this is a good time to take a look at your whole garden and just reimagine it and maybe redesign it. And if you're going to put in hardscapes or whatever, and put in your major trees, your major shrubs, and your backbone of your garden. Fall is really absolutely a fantastic
time. It's excellent.
Okay, we're starting to get the questions rolling in. Fig Jelly wrote to us. that's actually Angelica. She was asking about, is fall best for planting crepe myrtles? I want to line my driveway with them. And the two of you just answered that, saying, actually now, because it's warm, this is when they're most active, right, Tom Erickson?
Right.
So now is the time to do it.
Yeah, I mean, they can be done if they're in a container, you know, and not dug up and burlapped or, you know, moved from somewhere else in the garden. They can be done now. But potted plants, crepe myrtles, can be done anytime. It's just you can't dig them out of the ground and move them in the cold weather. But,
okay.
Yeah, and you can also see the colors.
Jordan from Wilmington asks, ground turtles are an invasive species. How can he get rid of them?
Ground pearls is what he said.
Okay, pearls with a P, ground pearls.
Yeah, that's a lawn question, and that's not my...
And unfortunately, it's not mine either. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Okay, and we'll put up a link to New Hanover County and Brunswick County Extension Services because they also do a great job of answering questions about lawns. Marilyn from Wilmington asks, what are some good plants to deter snakes? Will lemongrass grow as a perennial here? So for deterring snakes, I'm thinking of pampas grass, Tom Erickson.
That doesn't deter them. We've had that conversation before.
Yes,
that invites them. I don't know on that one. I know that sometimes people will use, I think, lime to scatter out into the garden. But as far as deterring snakes, I mean, you probably have a rodent problem. And if you can get that under control, you'll probably have some fewer snakes. But don't leave things around like wood piles or that kind of debris where they can nest in it. And like we said, the pampas grass is a perfect place for them to nest.
That's when people cut it back. They often find snakes in pampas grass.
Because so it hollows. That was a,
And maybe just good garden culture, meaning keeping your garden clean, going out there regularly and seeing what's up rather than letting things go for years at a time where snakes could.
And so that's what they do, Barbara Sullivan. Snakes tend to get into wood piles. They tend to get into places where people don't go. People won't disturb
Undisturbed places, yeah, I would think.
And Marilyn also asks, will lemongrass grow as a perennial here?
I have not had it over winter, but...
Yeah, I mean, if you had it in a real hot spot of the garden, you know, maybe up against the south side of the house where it's really, the ground is warm and drier in the winter, but it's not something you can rely on. I mean, occasionally it can make it through, but it's not something I would sell as a perennial.
Right, but it'll do very well all for many, many, many months.
And Caroline from Wilmington is asking about starting an herb garden. What are some good herbs to start with for fall?
Well, fall is a good time to plant all sorts of herbs, including some of the, pretty much any herb, I would say, but some of the cool weather herbs like dill and coriander, which are not as happy in the hottest months of the year. This is a good time to go ahead and enjoy those until for as many months as you can. But I would say this is... A good time to plan out an herb garden, and pretty much any parsley does beautifully. Of course, your hot weather herbs like basil are, you know, they're going to be over. But tarragon, Mexican tarragon, which is a good substitute that we use here that's perennial.
Okay.
For us, it's a substitute for French tarragon.
And I will let you expand on that answer when we come back from this break. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's our annual fall planting show with our two experts, Barbara Sullivan and Tom Erickson. Do you have a question about what to plant where you live or how to handle a garden problem that has seemed intractable? You can call us during this live Wednesday show at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis-Hilburn. We're talking today about fall planting in southeastern North Carolina and northeastern South Carolina. It's become an annual tradition on Coastline to check in with our resident garden experts just before the fall season is upon us and get them to answer your questions. With us today is Barbara Sullivan. She's the author of Garden Perennials for the Coastal South, available on Amazon. She also lectures frequently about gardening. And Tom Erickson is the co-owner of the Transplanted Garden in downtown Wilmington, a garden center and nursery. You can ask your own gardening questions on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or by emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. Just before we went to break, Caroline from Wilmington had asked about starting her herb garden. And Barbara Sullivan, you were listing some of the good cold weather herbs, which you say is actually most of them except...
Right.
Basil.
Right. Basil will be needing to, it's not going to make it through the winter, but I would say you can plant just about any herb that you want to at this point of the year. Your mints, rosemary, chives, oregano, with the caveat that when you plan your herb garden or your containers, be sure that it's in a sunny spot because they do need sun. Mints can do well with a little bit, with part shade, but most other herbs are going to need sun. And during the break, Tom was talking about some small moths.
Yeah, so we have some rosemary bushes, and we've had these cocoon-like things that have appeared on the bushes, and they spread.
Yeah, it's a tiny little brown moth that flies around in the evening and at night, and it lays its eggs, and then it creates like little cocoons inside the you see it more on rosemary. I mean, it's the most noticeable because it's a bigger plant. But it will also get into things like thyme and sage, a lot of those woody, you know, really aromatic herbs. And an easy way to combat it, it usually starts in June and goes through the hot weather of September, and then it sort of wanes off.
And if you don't treat it, will the plant die?
They can pretty much destroy it, yes. I mean, I've seen, you know, I've got most of my herbs in pots. I like to, you know, use them in containers. And if you let it go far enough, yes, it can kill a big, huge rosemary plant. I mean, and what I do is use it's a bacteria. It's called BT. And they use it for, you know, there's different types of it for different applications. They'll use it to control the larvae of the Japanese beetles when they're in the lawn. You can use this. And what I do is I just mix it up in a watering can. It's kind of stinky, so you might want to wear a pair of gloves and do it when you're finished in the garden and not going to be standing over it. But it takes care of it. What it does is it makes the bodies of these little worms basically rot.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy way. While they're alive. And it's best to do it when they're, you know, when you first notice a sign of it. It's easier to kill them when they're smaller. But it's an organic thing. I mean, you can use it right up to day of harvest. Just rinse, you know, if you've just done it and you need to go out and get some rosemary, just rinse it off. But it is labeled as an organic way of controlling insects for farmers.
And there's a product called, because I was looking for years and years and years for BT because I'd read about it, and Bacillus thuringiensis. And finally I was at a local farmer's store, and I saw a bag called Worm Whipper. And and they said, well, why didn't you say you were looking for Worm Whipper? That's another.
So that's a colloquial term for BT.
Well, it's actually the name of it, and it's a powder that you dust with. It's a dust.
Okay.
So that's a different way of applying it.
We're talking with Barbara Sullivan and Tom Erickson, our resident garden experts. They're answering your fall planting questions on this live Wednesday show. You can call us at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org, and make sure you do .org, not .com. Lydia writes, I'm trying to establish a bed in my yard of tea and garden roses, and they are looking just pitiful. Sad face. Few leaves and thin stalks. How can I encourage healthy growth in these plants? Some look great, most don't. Tom Erickson.
Fertilizer and good soil preparation. I mean, dig great big holes. Dig them, you know, fairly deep, a good 18 inches or more. Dig nice wide holes, 2 feet or more, add tons of compost, blend that all into your existing soil, and then keep them well fed. I mean, we get all our roses from Witherspoon up in Raleigh-Durham area, and they have a formulation that has a quick and a slow release that you can basically put on the plant once in the spring, and it takes it through pretty much the entire season. We have just taken all of our roses at the shop and cut them back and reapplied some more fertilizer to them. And that way they'll look really nice and get them blooming for the fall. And they'll probably bloom right up until close to Christmas if we don't get all that cold. So feeding with the roses is a key thing. The stronger you keep them, the less, you know, problems you're going to have with disease. I mean, if you don't feed them and you think that just digging a hole and throwing them in sandy soil is going to work, it's not.
Well, she also asks, how valuable is a compost that breaks down kitchen waste like onion skins and cantaloupe rinds? Does compost significantly help yard plants? And if so, then how would she get a simple compost going?
So what you want to do if you want to create compost is you want to have a formula that's about three parts of carbon, one part nitrogen, or three parts brown, one part green. And the green includes things like grass clippings, but also the kinds of things she was mentioning, like vegetable and fruit scraps. And you don't want to put any meat or fat or anything like that in there, but eggshells, coffee grinds. But you want to get the right proportion for it to sort of cook correctly.
Tell us that proportion one more time.
Okay, so three parts brown, one part green is what you're sort of aiming for. And you also want to put in some thin layers of dirt with it. And you want to keep it turned. And theoretically, I have not had a lot of luck myself, I've got to admit, with composting. I've tried and tried, but there are wonderful composters you can buy that help you turn it. They're made of plastic, and they're great big barrels, and you can put your compost there. You can create your own with some chicken wire. Usually you would end up putting two or three side by side so that if they're at different stages of maturing or... And then eventually it is a very good product to put on your plants and to use while you're planting or to top dress your plants.
We're talking with two garden experts. That was Barbara Sullivan you just heard. She's the author of Garden Perennials for the Coastal South. And we have Tom Erickson with us today. He's the co-owner of the Transplanted Garden. They're answering your gardening questions on this live Wednesday discussion. You can call us today at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Wes from Wilmington called in a question about preserving caladiums. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Can you just heavily mulch them to preserve them, or should you dig them up and store them?
They'll need to be dug. What you're going to want to do is dig them up when they start to die down. It'll probably be late September, mid-October. They start to kind of peter out fairly early because of the heat and the day length. And what you'll need to do is dig them, cut the foliage back, leave an inch or two of stem so you don't cut too close to the bulb. And then what you'll need to do is leave them out in the sun to dry, to harden off. And you'll want to, you know, as you're digging them, rinse off all the soil so that they can dry well. Then what you'll need to do is dust them in a powdered fungicide, like something like Captan, so that they don't have any problems with rotting. And then what you'll need to do, the next stage is once they're good and dry and you've dusted them, is to take and layer them in some dry either peat moss or potting soil. Don't let them touch one another because that moisture between the two can start to cause fungus, which is one of the reasons you want to put the powder on them, the Captan or Benamil. And then you'll just store them somewhere fairly cool and dry. The temperatures here in Wilmington are a bit too cold for them to overwinter. I think they do okay in a further zone south, you know, zone 9, get a little bit warmer. But the cold can get into the shallow surface of the ground, which is where the bulbs are.
And Tom Erickson, in the past, you've said when people come into the store and say, do you bring your plants in the winter? You've said... Well, you have kind of a smart-ass remark about that, well, which is always fun.
Yeah.
We like that you express yourself
yeah.
that way.
I mean, if hibiscus and things like that, I mean, for the $20, $25 you pay for something like that, is it worth the insect problem you're going to have to battle? I mean, because you're going to have aphids and mealybugs and scale and all sorts of things. And, I mean, you can start, you know, if you haven't been, start spraying with, like, a horticultural oil if you're planning on bringing these things in, and do it about every 7 to 10 days. And so that means getting all that out and going through all that work. And then, you know, try to get them as clean as you can before you bring them in. And that probably won't be till, you know, closer to Thanksgiving, you know, depending on what it is. And, you know,
when you could just get a new one when the season is right.
I mean, if it's a special gift, a memorial gift, something along those lines, that's a different story. But, you know, these things get big and leggy and ugly by the end of the season. And then, you know, there's a lot of projects in the garden, and that doesn't necessarily need to be one of them.
We're talking with two garden experts about fall planting and planning for that, and they're also answering your gardening questions, any gardening question that you have on this Wednesday. The phone number to call is 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. Lynn asks, why do bag bugs appear in some years and not others?
It's just cyclical like anything else. Some years you have more diseases or more insects. I mean, it's just, you know, and certain things are more periodical. You know, they might take 2 or 3 years to reappear. It's their, you know, their own maturation process, you know, from laying from egg to a larvae that might sit in the ground for a couple years or wherever, and then they just kind of come back in waves.
And she also asks, is there a fertilizer which promotes growth in pecan trees and enhances pecan production?
I mean, I would think a basic tree and shrub food would be good for that. I mean, you can go on to NC State's website and look up, you know, fertilizing pecans, and they should have, I'm sure, paper, you know, paper sheets that you can print out, a PDF file that you can print out and do more research. But I think just trying to get good growth so that you've got a bigger tree will give you enough pecans.
And Bill from Wilmington called in and asked, how do you keep weeds out of a permeable driveway, currently gravel, without doing labor-intensive pulling of weeds or using weed killer? They live near the Sound, and they want to avoid using chemicals on the driveway. Barbara Sullivan.
Well, one thing you could do would be what you would have done before you put the driveway down, which is to put some landscaping cloth, but possibly he had already done that. I don't know. I think if you have landscaping cloth and you have a deep enough layer of gravel that you just do have to pull every so often. Just keep, I mean, it's not the answer he probably wants to hear, but you just keep at it on a fairly regular basis. You don't have to be out there every week or every, maybe every 6 weeks, just go out. And also after it's rained, when the weeds are looser, and just if you keep at it that way, then it shouldn't be a problem as long as you have deep enough gravel.
And we have an email from Suzanne. She writes, I have a large planting of pampas grass. Yay, that's Tom Erickson's favorite plant. That, just teasing you, Tom. That original developer planted to camouflage utility fixtures, which that's something I've also seen in some of these newer developments around the region. How would you recommend I remove it? And is there any way to get rid of it without digging it up? I don't want to disturb the underground utility cables. Great question.
You have to get basically a chain wrapped around it, and then you have to get literally a truck. And you have to pull it up that way. It has to be dug out. There's no way to get rid of it without. It's a huge project to get it out, which is why a lot of people do not recommend planting it to begin with.
Yeah, I mean, you can go in there with a shovel and take it out. You're going to obviously need to get the lines marked. Call before you dig, people. If you get just underneath the base of the plant and cut the roots there, you can get the top of the plant out without taking the entire root system out. The growth point is right there where the roots meet the base of the stems. So if you can get just cut right underneath that, you can get rid of it.
So it will not come back
if you
cut it at the right spot.
If you cut it at the right spot. The same thing with crabgrass. I mean, it's got that little central point where everything radiates out. And if you cut the roots just right there under that little spot, it won't come back from the roots. Now, not saying you can do that with all grasses, but with those, it will work that way.
And there are, we talked in the very beginning of this show about how it's a good time to plant some perennials, trees, shrubs, and perennials. And Barbara, can you give us just an idea of the perennials that would be good?
Yes, it's hard because there's so many we could be here for the rest of our lives. However, several things I wanted to say. First of all, there are some perennials that are blooming or that will be blooming very soon in the fall. So this would be a good time to sort of see how those look and see if you would want them in your garden and then be able to anticipate their bloom next year. And some of them are natives, and we are kind of pushing to grow more natives in all of our yards so that we do what Doug Ptolemy has recommended, which is create sort of a patchwork of native landscape built up of various individuals' yards. I'm not describing that too well, but this is to encourage the native insects and to provide food for native birds and such. So some of the ones that are blooming at this time of year or will be blooming in the fall a little bit later are natives like swamp sunflower and asters, Baltonia, wild ageratum, which is a beautiful blue that's similar to the annual ageratum but taller, obedient plants, a lovely pale lilac color, goldenrod. The list goes on and on. Black-eyed Susan, Coreopsis, which bloom in the summer and in the fall. Beautyberry is a Native American shrub with beautiful purple berries. So there are quite a few lovely plants that bloom in the fall to be aware of. But also, any of the perennials that you might want that bloom in spring and summer can be planted now. And there's a long list of those, which
we might get to. But let me ask you about the timing of this. We've kind of said, you know, Tom Erickson explained that now, because it's hot, is a really good time to plant some crepe myrtles. That's when their root system would be very active and they could get established. But when we talk about fall planting, what do we really mean? Is this end of September stuff? Is it next week? Is it what's the timing on this?
Yeah, I mean, in the next few weeks, we'll start to cool off, hopefully. I mean, last year, we didn't seem to cool off at all. I mean, we were 80 degrees in January and February. But, I mean, just watch the weather and see when things start to cool down. We also want to be a little bit, you know, watching of, like you were mentioning earlier, the tropical storms out there. So, but as things start to cool down in September and October and November, and, I mean, right through the winter, you know, through January and February is a great time to plant trees because it still gives them time to get rooted in before the, you know, they start to leaf out. And that helps tremendously. You're not out there watering it every day or every other day, depending on your situation and the type of plant. But basically most of your trees and shrubs and camellias can be done, you know, now. I'll be bringing those in towards the end of September, early October, when things do cool down. And the fall blooming camellias will obviously start first. And then we'll get those in, and then as space allows, we'll bring in some of the more the winter bloomers. But it's a good time for basically any of your trees and shrubs, starting, you know, basically mid to late September, and then right on through in February, and smaller plants, you know, even longer. But to get those in before they're, you know, actively growing is a lot easier than waiting until everything's out and blooming. It also, you know, plant a cherry in the fall, the flowers will last a lot longer in the spring because it won't get drought stressed and then drop the flowers prematurely, things like that.
It's also it's also a great time to transplant, to go running around your garden moving things all over, and to divide things like daylilies or other plants which are easily divided, hostas and things like
that. So let's talk about that when we come back from this break.
Sure.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's our annual fall planting show. When you get to call in with your garden questions for our experts. After this break, you'll have one more segment to get your question in. The number during the live Wednesday show is 910-343-1138. You can also email your question to coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm your host, Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're exploring the garden today with two experts who are here to take your questions during this live Wednesday discussion. Tom Erickson, co-owner of The Transplanted Garden, and Barbara Sullivan, author of Garden Perennials for the Coastal South, are both with us today to help you solve your head scratchers and guide folks who are new to the area and the climate, and help you plan for fall and next spring. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. You can also send emails to coastline@whqr.org. Barbara Sullivan, you said that the fall is also a very good time to start dividing plants.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about which plants are conducive to that?
Well, pretty much any plant that, how would I put it, doesn't have a central crown. Is that how you put it, Tom? Plants, things like Rudbeckias, plants,
I mean, Shasta daisies, I mean, things that are kind of finished blooming now, and a lot of the black-eyed Susans are kind of waning. Things that the clumps have just gotten too big, you can get in there and start, you know, lift up the whole plant or take part of the plant away. If the clumps have gotten really big, you can take chunks from the edges and reset them and get the dead, you know, centers out. Things like irises, this is a very good time to replant those. If they didn't bloom well this spring for you, what happens is they kind of run themselves over. They get overcrowded, and then they need to be divided. And you'll notice a big difference if you get that done, get some fertilizer on them, Check your soil pH. They do like it a little bit on the limey side, so add a little lime to your soil and some more compost, you know, for any of these things that you're adding. I mean, you're going to want to fertilize them and add compost and to, you know, get them going. And if they need lime or something acid, you know, you can check in literature on that. Or, you know, like I said earlier, go to NC State's website and, you know, just punch in a search onto there. I mean, they've got great information.
And what about hydrangeas? If they didn't bloom well this year, is now also a good time to do so? What should we be doing with hydrangeas?
With hydrangeas, pretty much you don't want to do much to them at all in the fall. During the winter, if the plants have gotten really, really large, you can go in and take a third of the oldest stems down to the ground, but don't cut the plant back at this point. Taking entire stems out is fine, but if you take and cut the plant back now, in later in the fall, or winter, or early spring, you're going to lose all your blooms. And this is one question we get constantly. You know, it didn't bloom this year. I said, well, when did you prune it? Well, I cut it to the ground in January. Isn't that what you're supposed to do? Or I cut it back in, you know, November because I didn't want to look at the sticks all winter. Yeah. And the flower buds are on the top third or quarter of last year's stems. So if you start removing stems, you're going to remove all your blooms.
Right. And you can't see them, but they're under there secretly hiding.
Yes.
I wanted to just say, if I could, a couple of things that I hadn't mentioned that are some wonderful plants that will be blooming in the fall here that are kind of unusual and fun. One is ginger lilies, which have a beautiful smell to them. They're sometimes called butterfly ginger. There are all sorts of different ginger lilies, bottle brush ginger, and those actually are plants that can be very easily divided, but they're fall bloomers. And also there's a great plant called Lycoris radiata, which is spider lily, and it's the reason I love it is because it comes up, the flower comes up before there are any leaves, so it just suddenly spurts up, like you'll go out one day, and suddenly there'll be all these little stems with spidery red flowers on top, like little Sputniks, if anyone remembers what Sputnik was, where there had been nothing, where there had been bare ground. And then the leaves will follow. So they're kind of a surprise, and they're fun. The pink version is called Naked Ladies, but same thought. So and bulbs of all sorts, this is a good time of year to be planting pretty much all sorts of bulbs, and not just your standard ones, but we have all kinds of great bulbs that bloom all summer here in the coastal south.
And what would be just a few examples?
Well, there are little fairy lilies, which are very small but lovely, and they bloom after it rains. You have crinum lilies, which have enormous foliage and beautiful white flowers in the summer. Those are a couple of that come to mind.
Okay. And we had a call earlier, Noni from Wilmington. She said in response to the weeds question, Bill from Wilmington had called in and said, how do you keep weeds out of a gravel driveway without doing labor-intensive pulling? And she says you can mix Vicks vinegar, mix vinegar with water and liquid soap like Dawn, and it'll get rid of weeds. Does that sound logical?
I've seen it online, but I haven't experimented with it. But I mean, there seems to be enough of it, you know, information about it online that I would assume it would work. I mean, the vinegar would kind of desiccate the plants with that strong acid, and the soap would make it, you know, spread a little bit easier in the plants. But with the vinegar, I mean, if you've got metal sprayers, I'd make sure you'd rinse it out well, because it, you know, it's an acid and it'll destroy the metal.
And I've also heard of people using boiling water too on weeds.
Wow. Lee writes, I created a raised bed this spring with transplants of several varieties of tomatoes and peppers. All of the leaves started dropping after a few weeks, and I researched fungus and concluded it was either early blight or Septoria leaf spot. I removed the infected plants, treated the others with a fungal spray, but it still spread to the remaining plants. Manageable, but a pain. What causes the fungus? How do I fix it? I rotated in arugula, carrots, and okra, and wonder if they're going to make it. T- Tom Erickson.
The arugula and the carrots should be fine because it's a totally different plant, and most of your fungal diseases are fairly specific. Tomatoes are tough around here. You've got to get them in early, early, early. I mean, March, if you can, and, you know, protect them from cold, late frosts and that way. I mean, if you wait until May and start planting tomatoes like would be more common up north, it's just too late. I mean, you're going to end up with those sorts of problems. I have given up on tomatoes. I've tried, and I mean, blossom end rot and hornworms, yeah. And then the squirrels come in as they start to turn, and I go to the farmer's market on Saturday morning.
That's exactly just, our experience with tomatoes.
It's just a whole lot simpler.
And maybe try container gardening. I've given up also, but early varieties for sure. You have to plant specific very early varieties and
some of the heirlooms are very good, but I mean, like I said, you've got to get them in early, and you know, by early summer, they're pretty much done.
We have a question from Richard. Richard from Winnebo says, when younger, he would find a plant in the wild they would call a dewberry. It would look like a blackberry. Are these available to buy or plant commercially?
I've heard of dewberries, but I don't know of a source for dewberries. I mean, you might go online and look. I mean, there's just not a whole lot of people growing a lot of those things like that. So you're probably going to need to go mail order.
Virginia from Curry says she used to grow rugosa roses while living in the Triangle, but is hesitant to do so here. She can't find them in the garden centers.
Well, actually, rugosa roses are very good for seaside locations. They do very well. They can tolerate salt spray, and they are an excellent rose. And coming back to the question of roses, not all roses do well here because we have such a humid climate, and they're very susceptible to black spot, which you can control with things like lime sulfur and some fungicides that are sort of safer. But that usually only works in the cooler months. So during the summer, you often have to resort to more toxic chemicals to control the black spot. So I always recommend using, if you can, roses that are highly disease resistant, and there are some out there that are really very, very resistant to black spot. But there are others. A lot of the hybrid teas tend to be you end up with sticks and all the leaves have fallen off, and it's not a pretty sight.
You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 FM. It's our fall planting show with our two resident garden experts, Tom Erickson of the Transplanted Garden and Barbara Sullivan, author of Garden Perennials for the Coastal South. You just have a few minutes left to get your question in on this live Wednesday show at 910-343-1138. You can also email us at coastline@whqr.org. That's .org. Louise from Wilmington says she planted a dogwood earlier this year, but it didn't make it through the summer. When is the right time to plant a dogwood tree, and what are some reasons for why it might have died?
Well, fall's a very good time for that, but dogwoods really are more and more susceptible to anthracnose and other mildew diseases. So, I mean, if you can get them in this fall and keep them fed, don't overwater them. They don't like a whole lot of water. I mean, they're going to need moisture, but they don't like to be overwatered. We've had some luck with some of the newer hybrids, some of the Coosa hybrids, which seem to hold up a bit better. But they are getting to be more and more difficult as, you know, our climate gets warmer and warmer.
Are you noticing that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things. I mean, the dogwoods really started to go into a serious decline back in the late 70s. I was in Connecticut at that point, and we got down to 25 below zero and then had a couple of summers of really severe drought. And even big mature trees were starting to wilt. Because of the drought, and there was dieback, and that's when the anthracnose really started to take hold. And they've just been on a sort of a downhill spiral since. I mean, and it seems to be everywhere. You know, here it's particularly difficult. The pink and the red dogwoods don't do well at all. I mean, we had a really cold winter a couple years ago, and I noticed a number of them that had been out there for years, they finally bloomed because they got enough cold. But some of the white versions will still, you know, do okay, but you're going to need to get some spray on them, you know, for mildew and anthracnose, and really baby them while they're young to get them going. I've got an old one in my yard, and it's time to just bite the bullet and make it go away because it's so full of mildew. The blossoms start to come out and they turn black, you know, instantly. So.
And now I haven't looked at the meteorological records for this season yet, so I don't know, but it seems like this has been a pretty wet season.
Yeah.
Is that what you're seeing, and could that be a reason that some people have had trouble?
That will encourage root rot in all sorts of plants that would normally.
Yeah.
Is there anything to do about that, or is this just something we have to live through?
It's something we have to live with, but we also need to make sure that if you're planting a dogwood, that you plant it in really well-drained soil. You can't take and put it in heavy clay. It's just not going to work. They need good drainage, and, you know, like I said, they're going to need some babying.
Rena writes, where can you buy the native plants and shrubs that you've mentioned? And she also wants to know how she can manage fungus, mildew, and black spots on plants and shrubs.
Well, since Tom can't do this, I will put in a plug for his garden center because he has wonderful plants, as does Meg Shelton, who has an herb farm, but she also has things that are, I guess, in some ways, many plants can be considered herbs, even if you wouldn't actually cook with them because you could be using them for all sorts of other purposes. But anyway, she has plants in addition to herbs that are perennials. But a lot of the natives, Tom sells, and a lot of the more recognizable common garden plants like Rudbeckia and Coreopsis actually happen to be native and happen to do well. So I would say, yeah. And plus, I was going to mention one other thing, which is somewhat of a segue here, which is that you can also grow things from seed. And this is a good time of year to start seeds for what are called cool weather annuals. So those are flowers which we all know pansies. Everybody's pretty familiar with pansies. So there's a whole range of flowers in addition to pansies, which you can either get at the garden center, which have already been started, or you could start yourself from seed. But things like calendula and snapdragons, larkspur, California poppies, English daisies, things like that, which will do really well until the very, very hot weather comes and sort of knocks them out.
They'll last through the winter?
Yeah, and they usually will make it through, depending on the severity of the winter, but they'll usually make it through, and they may look a little raggedy at some point, but then they will flourish in the early spring to early through spring into early summer.
We have a question from Jonathan. He says, two questions. One, every winter my broccoli bolts in a heat wave. How do I protect plants from warm spells?
Well, there's not much we can do about that. I mean, you know, plant it. You can plant it again in, say, late January, mid-February. You usually have starts coming along then as well. They're available. But, you know, planting that in the fall, I had problems with that last year because we were so warm. Like I said earlier, I mean, we were in the 80s, you know, January, most of January, with the exception of one or two nights, and the same in February. And then we had 25 degrees in March, which did a lot of damage to plants. I mean, they were starting to grow prematurely because it had been so warm. And then two nights down into 25, you know, just was devastating to some things.
And he has a question about planting a fruit tree, apple, peach, et cetera. He says, where do you recommend buying a tree to plant? Tom, I'll let you answer that in a second, but I do want to mention the new Hanover County Arboretum is having a Cape Fear native plant sale on September 16th. And Tom, you have all kinds of things for sale at the Transplanted Garden,
right,
which is on South 16th Street in Wilmington.
Right. Peaches, mostly you're going to find those available in the early part of the spring. They do okay here. Pears do fine. Apples, you need to find some low chill varieties, ones that need fewer hours below, I think it's 40 or 45 degrees.
And that's our time, so we'll have to get to Susan's question about keeping deer from the hydrangeas next time. That's this edition of Coastline. Barbara Sullivan, Tom Erickson, what a pleasure having both of you with us today.
Thank you. So much fun.
If you missed part of this episode, look for it at whqr.org, get the podcast, or find it on the WHQR app. Tune in for the rebroadcast of this episode Sunday afternoon at 3. Join us for Coastline Live Wednesdays and Thursdays at noon here on HQR News 91.3 and 98.9. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.